This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Travis Weber with us on the program. Travis is director of the Center for Religious Liberty at the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C., where he focuses on legal and policy issues pertaining to religious freedom. Travis is with us to discuss the growing threat to religious liberty in America today, especially in the area of abortion and marriage, and what we as Christians and the Christian community within North Carolina can do about it. Travis, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we're delighted to have you and appreciate so much the great work that you do and that FRC does on our behalf. Well, one of the areas that we've heard a lot about the attacks on religious liberty and faith is with respect to the abortion pill mandate that is part of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. And really, this is one of the most obvious recent examples of the government's assault on religious liberty. Of course, the U.S. Supreme Court recently issued an important ruling in the Hobby Lobby case, which involved a challenge to the abortion pill mandate in Obamacare. Tell us about that case, if you would, the Supreme Court's ruling, and why this is so important.
Sure. Well, that case is definitely a win, you know, for religious liberty. In the Hobby Lobby case, there were several for-profit, closely held businesses which challenged the government's requirement that they provide certain types of contraceptives that they believed cause abortions as part of their plans and provision of health care to their employees. And they challenged this government requirement under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which sets a high bar for the government to meet before it infringes on the religious liberty of citizens or corporations. You know, in this case, one of the issues is whether a for-profit corporation could even sue under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act or RFRA. And thankfully, the Supreme Court said that corporations could bring such claims. The next question was whether they were going to be successful in this case. And the court ultimately said that under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act's requirements, the government had not shown that it was furthering its objectives of provision of contraception by the least restrictive means possible, which the government has to do under the law's requirements in terms of aiming to prevent restrictions on religious activity. So because the government did not do that in this case, and there were easily identifiable options for the government to advance the provision of contraceptives apart from making these employers cover it themselves, the government had to go back to the drawing board and figure out how to do that. So basically, you know, that's what the case was about. It wasn't about, as many people think, pure access to contraceptives or anything else. It was simply about the employers being forced to play a part in something that they didn't want to play a part in due to their religious beliefs.
Right. And the whole reason behind the Religious Freedom Restoration Act on the federal level was that Congress passed that bill in 1993 to clarify that individuals or persons, and the definition of persons can be interpreted fairly broadly, but that persons do have a fundamental protected right to religious liberty and to, in this case with Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Wood, to operate their businesses and carry on their daily activities in a manner consistent with their faith.
Absolutely. The RFRA was passed in the early 90s, and you know, it's interesting and it's important to note that when it was passed, it was not controversial. It had a lot of support, and from liberal to conservative in terms of the political spectrum and even the activist and interested group spectrum of various groups that were involved in its passage. And this is something we have to remember today, that freedom of religion historically has not been that controversial in America. Only when these issues involving contraception get wrapped in, all of a sudden people start to waver on their beliefs, and this needs to be pointed out.
Absolutely. Well, another huge issue that we're dealing with on almost a daily basis, it seems now in North Carolina and across the country, is the whole debate over marriage. I'll say that if the proponents of redefining marriage to include same-sex couples or relationships get their way, this will pose a significant threat to religious liberty in our country. I know there are countless examples of the conflict between these efforts to redefine marriage and religious liberty, but Travis, if you will, share with us one of the most recent cases that we've seen which involved private owners of a barn in upstate New York. Talk about that case a little bit and why it is important.
Yeah, recently a New York Human Relations Commission had ruled against the owners of a facility, basically a country barn and some grounds where there was various other activities that folks could go and engage in and kind of celebrate the seasons outdoors. And basically, you know, one of the activities that the barn would often have on the property is wedding ceremonies and receptions. A couple had inquired with this barn whether they could hold a wedding there, and it quickly became apparent that it was a same-sex wedding. The barn owners politely informed the couple that it was against their beliefs to be part of such a ceremony, and they couldn't do that, but they'd be happy to host the reception, invited the couple out to the barn, to the facility to see it and visit. The couple refused, however, and shortly after that filed suit. Interestingly, this phone call was also recorded, you know, and when we kind of examine this whole scenario, it becomes apparent that they were targeting the owners of this facility to implicate them and be able to sue them. And this, the owners did, the Giffords did a fantastic job of really of showing that this is not about hatred or animus towards those in same-sex attractions, but merely they wanted to live and operate their business by their faith. Nevertheless, the couple sued. Ultimately, a New York commission ruled that the couple has violated the New York non-discrimination law, which requires that folks not discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation. We'll have to wait and see if they appeal that ruling. These issues are increasingly important. I think it's clearly, such laws are clearly a violation of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, in addition to free speech and free exercise protections under the First Amendment. And, you know, at some point, hopefully the Supreme Court will clarify that.
Now, Travis, a piece of good news is that the United States Supreme Court has recently issued some important rulings in religious liberty cases or cases that have religious liberty implications. We've already talked about the Hobby Lobby decision. There's a public prayer case out of the state of New York called Town of Greece v. Galloway. Talk to us briefly about Town of Greece and that opinion and how it helps to strengthen religious liberty in America.
Sure. Now, this is a good decision from the Supreme Court that we received several months ago. And in this case, the Supreme Court said that there was no Establishment Clause violation when a local government had a policy of permitting all comers, all local ministers, without discriminating between them based on religion. They could all come and offer a prayer before local government sessions. And this policy had been challenged on Establishment Clause grounds, primarily due to the fact that it ended up being a lot of Christian prayers offered because the town was overwhelmingly Christian. There were a lot of Christian churches in the area, but nevertheless, the town did have others of other faiths come and offer prayers. The policy is still open to all. And thankfully, the Supreme Court said that this was perfectly constitutional. The town was not discriminating between religions. And the town could also not censor the prayers of people when they came and offered the prayers. Interestingly, you know, it would actually be government involvement in religion and very problematic constitutionally if the town were to be required to go in and censor and edit the prayer content. So thankfully, the Supreme Court saw the sense in this and held that such policies were constitutional. This is good for all local governments, for when they permit, when they open up the floor to ministers from the community come in and pray. They don't have to be afraid of being challenged and having their policies challenged and ruled as unconstitutional. As long as they're opening this up to all, they are perfectly within their rights to do so.
Well, Travis, just from your personal perspective, your involvement in these religious liberty cases and these issues, why do you think we're seeing these continued attacks? What is behind the groups and the individuals who are seeking to silence people of faith in our nation?
You know, I think you have a few very vocal and hostile groups, the Freedom from Religion Foundation and others, who really, you know, they're a minority of people who are really hostile to any expression, public expression of faith. For whatever reason, this has driven them, and they feel that there is evil being perpetrated by these public expressions of faith. But they're a very small minority. And I think, by and large, most people are kind of in the middle where they don't oppose public expressions of faith or maybe even support them, but they don't often speak out strongly, make their views known. And that opens up the floor for these very small vocal minority to really have more influence than it should. You know, I think elsewhere on the marriage and sexual orientation issue, you have other dynamics at play where people, they are sympathetic to understanding these arguments that those of the same sex attraction have dignity and need to be protected, and therefore you can't discriminate. They're just unsympathetic to any actions of faith which would view that as sin against God. You know, what has to be emphasized here is that the beliefs on these matters of sexuality are motivated by love and their sincere beliefs, and they do not bear on an impact or hateful attitude towards that person at all, but it's a matter of belief in terms of how God has ordered the world. And so I think you see a lot of hostility due to that issue towards faith when it's manifested as taking a position on that issue. And it's important to emphasize truth with love when regarding marriage and the impact of faith on marriage.
Well, I absolutely agree with that, and I think that's a great reminder for our listeners that although these issues can really hit deeply and are issues that we feel very strongly about, because it really is part of our fundamental faith, that we really need to approach the individuals who are proposing restrictions and seeking to silence people of faith. We really need to reach out to them in love and in a courteous manner, but also be firm in our commitment, because we know that God's word is the truth. Travis, as we talk about that, I know it's easy for some folks to get discouraged as we hear more stories about people of faith being threatened with legal action or being bullied because they hold deeply held religious beliefs about the proper role of sexuality within relationships. What advice do you have for Christians who are listening to our program today who may feel frustrated or discouraged about what we're seeing take place in our culture?
Yeah, I think it's important to remember first that although we often see discouraging items in the news, there's a lot encouraging that's going on that we just don't hear about. It's important to remember that God is at work and his power is not thwarted by the actions of man who may be hostile to him. That being said, you know, I think oftentimes we can get into discussions and spend our time really getting worked up on these things when it really may not have a lot of practical impact. It's important for people to remember that practical steps taken in context do matter. You know, when given the opportunity to write or voice pleasure or displeasure on a certain issue to elected representatives, when done in enough force, that does matter and gets the attention of our elected officials. In addition, when there's an opportunity to rally and protest on some issue, when done with, you know, with a large enough turnout, that gets people's attention. And we need to just make our voices known generally on these various issues. We still have the freedom to do that, thankfully, whereas many places in the world, Christians and others do not. And we need to take a lesson from our brothers and sisters overseas who are experiencing very, very severe persecution. If we were to get discouraged, you know, about being marginalized or hated for our views, many places in the world, people are being imprisoned and killed. You know, we shouldn't say, oh, I'm not going to do anything because it doesn't matter, because our persecution is not that serious. We should kind of look at that in context and say, hey, I still have the opportunity to speak out, so I'm going to do so.
Well, if you read chapter 5 of Matthew, the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, it speaks very clearly in terms of us as followers of Jesus Christ being salt and light in our culture. And if we remain silent, all we're doing is handing over our culture to those who have a completely different point of view and perspective. And so it's so critically important that we do stay involved, that we do engage our culture, that we do speak the truth in love. Travis, unfortunately, we're nearly out of time for this week. Where can our listeners go to learn more about your work and the work of the Family Research Council?
Sure. You can check out our website, frc.org. You'll be able to find materials that I've authored on that website and see what we do on religious liberty and on other issues.
Well, we appreciate that and appreciate so much the Family Research Council. I mean, we really work hand in hand on a lot of issues. So we're so grateful to you, Travis, and thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on Family Policy Matters and for the great work that you do at the Family Research Council.
Thank you. It's been great being on here today.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800. or visit our website at ncfamily.org.